League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Joe George behind the glass. I can't believe we're on a Thursday, and Joe George is still with us. I had the under on this. Blankers. I'm a little bit surprised.
I'm borderline shocked, but I'll take it. He's all right.
Yeah, I am too. D'Amico Ryan's going to be announced today at 3:59 at the introductory press conference. You think this is going to be the shtick that they keep going with the Houston Texans? Every press conference at the top of the hour is going to start at 59.
It's more creativity than I think I've seen from the Texans maybe since their existence in terms of their Twitter and their ability to kind of make light of themselves or have some fun or do some things. I thought the funniest and the most ironic, and did you see Berman's tweets yesterday?
Yeah, they didn't figure it out until like 3 hours later.
It's one thing to basically catch yourself and not figure it out. Then when you open yourself up by putting it on Twitter, he just got annihilated. It was just like, come on, Mark. You got to be better than that. You could figure that out.
I don't mind that he was honest. It's very un-Berman-like.
It definitely is. I'll give him credit for it. The fact that he put himself out there. Oh, I don't.
I actually disagree with that. Like, I think Berman's sharp, but he's so like blinders on, like, you know, what's the next thing I need to be working on, that it's easy to kind of overlook it.
That's why I'm saying it's so unlike Berman. It's so not Berman-like. Like, Berman's always about breaking the stories and on to the next thing, and what's the big thing that I got to get on so that I'll get out in front of it for anybody else. For him to do something like
that, that's why I think he would forget the 59, though. Like, he would just gloss over and be like, okay, well, who's the OC going to be? Who's the DC going to be? Like, he's so worried about the next thing that he just glosses right over. Okay, that's kind of weird. Who cares? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just think that's what I'm saying. He's just so matter-of-factly business that it's not something that he would normally do is send out a tweet like that. But I give him credit that he put himself out there. It's just, you got to know on Twitter, once you do that, that it's not going to be all roses and sunshine.
Yeah, I talked to Berman for like 10 minutes. I think it was Monday. I love that guy. I love Mark Berman so much. D'Amico Ryan, somebody asked us this question the other day. It might have been on Twitter. It might have been on text. I don't remember, but I think it's a good question.
Okay.
Because, look, D'Amico's in. Everybody's excited. We're excited. The fan base is excited. If you believe in there being a Houston Texans alumni, they're all excited. The NFL, you know, insiders are saying that this is a home run. Like, it's been positive, and it should be positive because this is a good hire. This is a good step one for what is a multi-step process for the Texans to get back to being relevant again from an NFL perspective and then to be a postseason contender as well. I think there's going to be many steps here, and I think we have to be patient as well. And I know that's frustrating because the Houston Texans have won 4-4-3 games over the course of the last 3 years. So 11 wins, last three seasons. You want to win 11 games in a single year, not over the last three. But in year one for D'Amico Ryans, how would you define success for him in his first year as a head coach?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of ways. You and I kind of got into this a little bit yesterday. I think for a lot of reasons, it's hard to say I don't want to see a lot of wins. I don't expect to see a lot of wins, and I don't think fans should expect to see a lot of wins. I expect that maybe you'll see some progress and obviously maybe be better than you were last year. It just depends on the quarterback position. But I think that when you see an offense that's able to execute plays, that's not afraid of the moment, that it's kind of like what I said about Davis Mills a year ago. When you see a team that can put together and sustain some drives on offense or can, you know, get a good stand together on defense and shows that he's in control as a head coach, that the guys that are coaching for him have both sides of the ball in control, all three phases of the game, I should say, and that the younger players continue to get better. I think that that's when you start realizing there's progress. You're not going to see a Nathaniel Hackett-type breakdown that continues to watch the walls crumble around you until you just can't take it anymore. That you're going to see a coach that is in the moment, can make decisions, can be the CEO, and has his guys believing in him and executing the plan. I think that you can see success and progress in a lot of ways more than just wins and losses.
Yeah, for me, it's not the wins and losses in year one. Now, I do want to kind of throw a disclaimer out there and say that I'm over the embrace the suck. I'm not going to be rooting for the unless you get late in the year and it's obvious that the Texans are fighting for draft position. But going into the year next year, I'm gonna be pulling for the Texans to win football games. I think that there will be in a spot, especially if they get a quarterback. Like if they draft a rookie quarterback, okay, then you know what's the purpose of tanking for a top two pick for Caleb Williams or Drake May if you already have that franchise quarterback. So I do want to preface it by saying I'm in a position where I'm going to want the Houston Texans to start to win football games, but also have the understanding that they're not going to win a lot of football games. You know, what's the scale? We can probably get into that in greater detail when we figure out who the free agents they bring in are, what they do in the draft, what the rest of the coaching staff is. A lot needs to be done before you start looking at Vegas win totals and the win-loss record in isolating each week of the schedule. But for me, I think you're going to know it. I think you're going to know if it's a more quality football team and it's being run better. I think you're going to see a lot of the things that you said. Okay, you know, are they going to be the worst offense in the NFL? You would hope not. Are they going to be bottom three defense in the NFL? You would hope not. What does it look like on, you know, fourth down and one from the other team's 40-yard line in a tie game late? Little things like that. I think you're going to be able to see it more than it's going to be something that you can quantify in terms of wins and losses.
I think, Jeremy, if you look at it, and we can pull the examples of which, on the flip side, you can tell that it's not progressing, that it's not going in the right direction. And that is, I mentioned Nathaniel Hackett previously, but I'll mention Mike McCarthy in a lot of ways with the Cowboys in his first year and a half. You're seeing a ton of penalties. You're seeing a coach that looks like he can't figure it out in terms of time management, in terms of, you remember how much time they were wasting off the play clocks and not calling timeouts and not, again, things that we talked about even in the David Culley and Bill O'Brien era, but, you know, not challenging very obvious challengeable plays and not being in tune with your replay room. Those are the kind of things when you start wondering, you know, what's going on? Like, do they have it all together, or is this thing just going crazy all over behind the scenes? If you see that, you know, they got their bleep together, that they're making progress by being in complete control of every situation, and whether they win or lose the game, that might be just the other team has more talent and more skilled position talent. But you might have been able to hold your own and be in a game and cover spreads and keep the game close and maybe win some games that a year ago, like maybe that Indianapolis game to start the season, maybe that's a different outcome if managed a different way with another year of talent, if D'Amico's the head coach and not Lovey and you're not playing not to lose, instead you're trying to play to win. I see that D'Amico Ryans is more, I don't know this, but I feel he's a more aggressive type personality, that he's going to go for it if the moment is there. He's not going to sit back.
Yeah, I don't know if you can say that yet, though. Like, because, I mean, that was week one of the NFL season. Yeah, but, I mean, like, week one of the NFL season, when you're thinking you might be, like, in a divisional race, like, that was obviously, like, pie in the sky, wasn't true. But we also heard that Lovie Smith during training camp was showing his team videos of why can't they win the Super Bowl. So whenever you're sitting there week one and your goal is to win the division over the course of the full season, I don't disagree with Lovie Smith. I don't know why we're arguing, like, you know, talking about week one or whatever. I stand by Lovie Smith's decision to play for the tie because he wasn't looking at singular game. He wasn't looking at, well, we have nothing to play for. He was looking at it from the perspective of, we think we can win the bad AFC South, and we feel that if we go for it here, we're going to lose this game versus the potential of, like, converting a first down whenever your offense was really bad. Like, it looks weird, especially in hindsight over the course of an 18-week schedule when you won three games. But I think in week one, I actually think Lovie Smith got it right.
Okay, and this isn't even about the Lovie Smith decision. This is if D'Amico's in the same position.
We should play to win.
I think it is
about that decision.
I think that D'Amico is the guy that's going to take it a different way because D'Amico's got a six-year contract. D'Amico knows everybody's fired up about him. I don't believe D'Amico would be ripped if he tried it and was unsuccessful because I believe that people so much believe in D'Amico Ryans now that they're going to go, I like it. I like it. This is a new era of Houston Texans football, and he's not afraid of the moment. He's going to be aggressive, and he's going out to win. And I think that win or lose the game, he'll get credit for that. And he'll take it a different way. I think that Lovie, no matter how long his contract was, I don't think Lovie was ever comfortable in his position thinking that it was going to be for the long term. I think Lovie knows as much as we knew from the outside, just knowing and seeing everything that we saw, that this wasn't something that was, where they courted him and that they were, setting it up for him.
I mean, I think if you're in week one and Lovie thinks that he's going to be fired in a year, I think he probably goes for it. I think early in the season that Lovie Smith was confident he was getting more than one season.
Right, but I'm not saying it was a one-year deal, but I don't think he was ever confident that this was a long-term venture for him. And I think he knew, being around Caserio and with Caserio's plans and the way he's handled things, that at a certain point, I'm sure they were going to look for someone younger or more modern or more successful.
How long do you think Lovie thought he had?
2 to 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I think, too. But you're not thinking that you're getting fired after year one.
No, because, of course, that's never been done before. So you would think, you're looking at it going, hey, I'm happy to be here, and I'll take the job for as long as they're giving it to me. But, based on what I'm dealing with and the players that I have to pick from to put in positions, I'm not so sure that we're going to be successful regardless. So we'll just take it a day at a time. Whereas DeMeco with a 6-year deal is basically like settling in, going, I'm going to be here one way or the other. So we're...
The clock's not ticking on DeMeco. Yeah, but I think that's more of a DeMeco thing than the length of the contract thing, though. Like, I think it's more of a situation plus DeMeco as to why we don't think that DeMeco's short-term. Because, I mean, David Culley got a 5-year deal. No one thought David Culley's going to be here 5 years. So the length of the contract really means nothing to me. Like, it means a little. But it's more of Cal has fired two head coaches back-to-back years after a season. They have a fan favorite in DeMeco Ryans. That, to me, matters more than the length of the contract when you're trying to evaluate and guess how long DeMeco Ryans is going to get as the head coach of the Texans.
Okay, well, I mean,
the Texans have spit on lengths of contracts.
They have. They have. And like, look, we don't even know the language in those contracts because some say that Culley's not going to get the full 5 years and that, it was a situation where there were clauses if he was let go prior to that, that there was going to be a different set of payment options and a lot less money on the table in terms of how long he was paid. We don't know. We're seeing right now Matt Rhule in Carolina had multiple years left on his deal. Carolina tried to just walk away from it. He's got to take him to court because he's trying to recoup $5 million. So it was a mistake to give him $5 million if indeed it was a full guaranteed $5 million. Regardless, it was a mistake to hire David Culley. But I think that right. David Culley, even when he was brought in, knew he wasn't going to be long-term and that he was looking at 2 or 3 years. And I think that that was okay with him, where he was in his career, never being a head coach. And again, the team and what he had to deal with in the locker room. But I think now you get a guy that's using those two situations as well to basically understand, I'm here for a while. I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. And so I don't have the same kind of concerns those other two guys did.
I would have been higher. I would have been happy if I was David Culley and Lovie Smith and got fired and they handed me $20 to $25 million as I walked out the door. What do you define success for DeMeco Ryans in year one? If year one for DeMeco is a successful season, what has to happen? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Busy show today. We have the Johnsons on today. Keyshawn Johnson joins us at 1 o'clock, top of the hour. And then Travis Johnson, former DeMeco Ryans teammate, will join us at 2. So a very busy show. But how would you define success for DeMeco in year one? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Keyshawn Johnson joins us at 1 o'clock. Travis Johnson at 2 o'clock, former DeMeco Ryans teammate. On the day, the Houston Texans are announcing DeMeco Ryans as their new head coach. Press conference coming up at 3:59. Of course, we'll react to that tomorrow. Everybody's going to throw a parade. Have you planned the parade? Were you going to watch the parade, Blankers, for the DeMeco Ryans winning the press conference?
No, I'll be driving in the car, and then I'll be watching Twitter.
I think the press conference is today at 3:59, and the parade is scheduled for 11 a.m. tomorrow with DeMeco Ryans winning the press conference, which is a huge deal. Remember the parade last year after Lovie Smith won the press conference?
Yeah.
Time of my life, enjoying that parade.
Well, I think that the only thing that we can really capitalize on is the fact that the weather's supposed to change tomorrow and be sunny and clear and a little warmer. So that would be a perfect conditions for the victory parade for D'Amico Ryans. So
yeah, what is the weather over there? Is it like sub-zero? Because I saw you walk in with like with a huge jacket on.
Not really that big of a jacket. It's more a water repellent with a liner.
Joe George, how big is that jacket? Is it different in real life than it is on the Twitch?
I feel like it definitely looks worse on Twitch, but it's just a warm jacket.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
I mean, it was what, 41 this morning? It was 33 degrees this morning or 34 degrees this morning and raining when I walked the dogs, and I had that jacket on. So I kept it out, and I happened to put it on. I didn't know that I was going through the red carpet walk-in like the NBA players do. Next time I'll be more Harden-esque or Russell Westbrook-esque when I walk in. My bad.
It just looks like a jacket that, you know, you would dust off when it's freezing, you know.
Oh, no, I got those too, but I didn't happen to pull one of those jackets out.
I'm just telling you what it looked like.
What is the weather so much different where you're at?
It's in the 20s here.
Oh, good.
I mean,
what are you wearing, shorts?
Some t-shirt, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you're in a room in your hotel.
T-shirt. What would be a successful season for D'Amico Ryans in year one? 8755. Actually, I don't want to read that text message. We'll read that one later. 8278. I've said it before. The preseason is for studying. Talent aside, if the Texans show rhythm on both sides of the ball, that will be a food sign. Juan in Denver hoping to see good defense. To me, it's not so much about the wins and losses. Do I hope the Texans win more than four games next year? Yes, I do. I don't care if the Texans don't get the number one pick in the draft next season. I'm over that. I'm over embrace the suck. This was the year for it, but I don't think the Texans are a playoff team until at very least 2024. What you want to see in year one from D'Amico is for, like, one, we need to be patient with the year one head coach, and then secondly, you want to kind of have the hope that you could be a playoff team soon.
Yeah,
it means the incremental improvement offensively. You got to be a little bit better offensively, defensively, especially with that being D'Amico Ryan's side of the ball. Okay, let's see, you know, this modern approach to defense where D'Amico is the DC for the number one defense in the NFL. I'm not saying the Texans need to finish in the top 10, but better than Lovie Smith, right? Like, if you're not better than a Lovie Smith defense with more talent, another year in the rebuild, then I'm going to be a little bit concerned. Offensively, same thing. Like, this whole Pep Hamilton debacle, who is worse than Tim Kelly, you need to show improvements on that front as well. Maybe you sneak out a couple more wins. Maybe you finish with six wins on the season. But I think you're going to see year one success more based on your feelings towards your, like, what you think the Texans can be down the road. Like, at the end of the 2023 season, Texans win five or six games. But D'Amico Ryans had that success we're talking about, which is hard to really make tangible. It's more about the feeling of, like, feeling good about where the Texans are going more than anything else.
Well, you know what? We've seen it go both ways. But we've seen a guy like Vince Young or RG3 fall off the planet after an unbelievable rookie year. You don't want to see that with Petrie and Pierce. You know, you want to see your rookies continue to thrive and strive to be great and show encouraging things. You want to see improvements, quite honestly, from your two first-round picks. And you want to see Green be able to pass block. And you want to see Stingley get into his comfort zone playing more man and being the kind of guy that you expected you were getting and more like Sauce when you got him as high as you did. And then you want to see if Mechie can play, that'd be fantastic. And then you start looking at him and understanding he could be a big piece for this team going forward. And you look at some of the other guys and go, Christian Harris, you look at what you saw late in the season, you were encouraged. If he can pick up where he left off there, start doing more things, that's just another thing that makes you get excited. Then with all these five picks in the top three rounds and all the picks that you got coming your way, you see the development and that they hit on some of those guys too, and you're like, hey, look, it's starting to look like a real NFL roster. It's starting to look like guys across the board can play the game of football and should be here for the next 3 to 5 years to make this team better. And then, like you said, I don't expect them to make the playoffs next year, but the following year, I expect them to have their sights on being able to, late in the season, to be competitive trying to get in. And that's where you truly will see the next step of development, where the whole franchise is ready to take that next step.
Adam on the Twitter.com, I just want to see the defensive numbers improve, run defense especially. Here's the thing, though. like if you, let's say the Texans brought back Lovie Smith and you draft Jalen Carter, like you can get improvement from that defense, especially the run defense, even if you still had Lovie Smith back as the head coach. So like that's the built-in advantage that DeMeco Ryans is going to have, because yes, the Texans defense under DeMeco needs to produce better than the Texans defense under Lovie Smith. Lovie's defensive-minded guy, his 2 years calling plays for this defense were a travesty. It was a debacle. Did he have talent? No, he didn't. So, like, you know, you have to be able to tell both sides of the story. DeMeco should have more talent next year. He's going to have the second year of Christian Harris, Jalen Petrie, hopefully a full season of Derek Stingley, the money to spend, the draft capital that you have. So this team should be better statistically just by the talent you're bringing in alone, even if Lovie Smith was back. Now, that is a built-in advantage for DeMeco because, look, this year the Texans finished bottom, you know, three or four teams in the NFL in defense. If the Texans finish 20th next year in defense, which could have been done based just on the roster improvements you had, people are going to give DeMeco Ryans credit for that, which is kind of why it's the right time for DeMeco to take over, because a rock-bottom team, you improve a little bit, even if it's the roster that's leading to that improvement, you're going to get credit for that.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think that that's also going to be an interesting situation to watch develop, because I think DeMeco, and it goes back to the old adage about, you know, if you get credit for the, you know, some guys get credit for the wins, and some guys just only get credit for the losses and get killed for the losses. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see, like, if Nick is the guy that has a lot to do with the draft, and we don't know. And of course, DeMeco, if it's defensive players, should very well have a voice in the room and be a part of that decision making. But if they hit, those are going to be DeMeco picks. If they miss, those are going to be reasons why Nick Caserio's hot seat should be even hotter and people are going to be calling for his job. It's just the way the nature of the business says it's going to be. And you got a guy that everybody has already anointed as the guy, and he is beloved, and he is going to get a ton of credit. Caserio is a guy that is fighting out of his own issues of the past, and some that maybe he doesn't deserve so much, but he's going to be scrutinized more than he's going to be complimented. So it's going to be interesting how it all plays out. And if they do have those levels of success where we see the growth and we see the development, who truly will get credit for that? Because I think more times than not, it's going to be DeMeco. When in a lot of cases, I would say that especially if it's draft pick related or the right free agents brought in, it should be Caserio based.
Sure, yeah, I would agree with that. 8755 is right. How would you define success for DeMeco in year one? 713-780 ESPN. If Ryans is a Dan Campbell first year, it would be a successful year. They were never out of the game. They were always a pest with the opponents. We saw that a little bit more this year with Dan Campbell than last year, but even in year one, you saw it a bit, biting kneecaps, things like that. And then in the second year, I mean, they were knocking on the door in the playoffs. They went into the final week of the NFL season waking up that day with the hope that they would be a playoff team. Now, what happened earlier in the day, they never had a chance to play for the playoffs, but even then, you know, they beat the Packers and ruined their chance of making the playoffs. Hey, you know, don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, sure.
I think that's a pretty good comp, uh-huh. Honestly. I think that if the Texans are Detroit from 2021, where you're not winning a lot of games,
but you're competitive,
but you're tough to beat. Like, yeah. You're tough to beat. You're not getting in your own way. You're not getting blown out. And the Texans did some of that this year, and they did a little bit more of that last year with David Culley, too. I think it's a pretty good comp. Like, maybe you win five or six games, but then the other, you know, 10 other games, it's a 3.7-point game.
No, I'm with that 100% because you saw a competitive nature and attitude with the Lions from the minute that Campbell took over, and you expected that. And you mentioned the biting of the kneecaps, but literally it was the swagger that they had on the field, whether they were completely outmatched on paper or not. They never felt like they didn't have a chance to be competitive on the next play. And they played with that same kind of attitude every single play, and you could see it kind of steamroll into kind of momentum in games. And then as it translated in year two, winning more games. And I think that's what you want to see out of the Texans, because the tricky situation here is, you know, I said the Embrace the Suck campaign was for 2 years. Now, you don't have to suck next year, but the tricky thing for me is tightroping that line between you're going to see progress made, I would assume, just by adding more young players in the draft and a complete attitude and coaching change. But how much do you want to see? Because we go back to, you know, situations like the Burrow-Cincinnati deal, or other, even when the Lions had top five picks in two straight years. You want to make sure you have another really good pick so that you can still add another really good football player to a team that is still desperate to get as many as they can. And I think you got to be careful in terms of what you wish for, because you don't want to get ahead of the, you know, get ahead too soon. It'd be nice to see them competing for a playoff spot, but then realize it's going to be tougher to find some of those other big time players that are supposed to be pillars for you if you do. And I think that's why I'm not going to say embrace the suck next year, but I'm also.
Sounds like you want to embrace the suck next year.
Jeremy, there are days that I think about the Burrow Jamar Chase combo and going, if you can't, you know, whether you take quarterback or not, say, you know, you take, I don't know, if you go quarterback this year and you can get and you can be in the running for Marvin Harrison Jr. next year, I mean, if you hit on both, you have the ability to be relevant for the next 7 years, maybe.
Does Joel want to embrace the suck? 713-780-ESPN. I do have a question that I think will challenge you when it comes to that, though. 713-780-3776. No, it's a football question. I don't like talking basketball. Also, what would it take to have success in your mind for DeMeco in year one? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Keyshawn Johnson joining us at the top of the hour. We'll throw him the darn guest line. And then Travis Johnson, former teammate of DeMeco Ryans, will be joining us at 2 o'clock, a couple of hours ahead of the DeMeco Ryans press conference at 3:59. New head coach for the Houston Texans. How would you define success, though, for DeMeco in year one? And I don't want to say, you know, he's going to win this press conference. We're going to have the parade tomorrow, the press conference parade. Year one, 2023, what is a successful first year as head coach? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blankers, you were talking that last segment. You were kind of, be honest with you, you're on the fence about embracing the suck for one more year, because I can tell you don't think that the Texans will be a playoff team next year, which I don't either, and you shouldn't think it. If you are, you're a homer. Secondly, you started talking about, look, I've had some visions of what a, if you draft quarterback at two, and what a Marvin Harrison Jr. can do for an organization, much like Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase, which, I mean, yeah, sign me up, right? If I can get a Burrow clone and a Chase clone, I'm all in. So, like, to me, it sounds like you still want to embrace the suck for one more year.
You know what? I think it's too harsh. The phrase embrace the suck kind of embodied coaching, players, and organization. I think that maybe we're getting along the lines of finding something that goes with either follow the plan, like trust the process. Something that's a little bit sexier, obviously, but or catchier. But gives you that same mentality of you don't have to be like.
You just don't want to say it.
Well, no, I just don't think it's fitting anymore, because I think you got your coach. I think you're conceivably going to get either, you have to find a quarterback, but you could conceivably get your quarterback and you could get better with your draft and the extra draft capital that you have, so that you shouldn't be the embarrassment of the league anymore. You shouldn't be the Texans of the last 3 years in which locally and nationally, everybody chuckled and kind of went, oh, what's next? What now with the Texans? When you heard it was almost gloom, doom, and embarrassment every time you mentioned their name. Now it's like you're waiting to see the progress. You want to see them moving it forward. So I don't want them to suck and be the embarrassment and laughingstock of the league, but there is a part of me that says, if you truly want to see this rebuild continue on this path and maybe speed it up, maybe one more year where you got a top five level pick. Because that's what, you know, we're talking about Dan Campbell, talking about the Lions. The Lions still got Penei Sewell, and they got some guys, you know, very high in the draft that helped them solidify. Their offensive line now is one of the better ones in the NFL. You know, they got some skill positions, and they got them right because they misstepped on a lot of those picks in the past, to where it's the marriage between the front office and the coaching staff. It's getting the right players in there and the guys that are going to start to show you that they're going to be here for a while instead of the Rex Burkheads who's been here too long and the over-the-hill gang. So I want them to progress. I feel like they're going to be better. But then there's that part of me that says, look, I really want another top five level pick because I believe it would be so important whether you go with two offensive guys or you get a pass rusher, and now suddenly you got an impactful, marketable, big-time guy on the defensive side, just like you're putting together, hopefully, on the offensive side.
What if I told you that the Texans go defense? Because
this year?
Look, I think it's, I, yeah, because I think it's
helps me.
It helps you in what way?
It helps me feel better about the fact that the defense could be better. I don't think that bettering the defense is going to make this team win that many more games next year, and I would get my top five pick. I feel that personally.
I think it could. Like if you, it depends on how you attack free agency too. Like mm-hmm. I think if again, I think that this organization needs to be long term, not short term. I don't believe in the veteran, mediocre quarterbacks, the Garoppolos, you know, the Bakers, the Darnolds, the David Carr's brother. I don't believe in that. This is not where the organization should be in year one for DeMeco, because I'm seeing some people advocating for Jimmy Garoppolo as the quarterback and to win seven games next year. Why? Yeah. Like, why? DeMeco has a six-year deal. You're building for something in the future. Garoppolo shouldn't be part of that build. And what happens in year one in terms of seven wins, like, that should not even be a factor. If you win seven games because you hit on quarterback at number two and all these young players look really good and you got buy-in from the players and the defense and all the young rookies last year develop, awesome. That's great, because that's a terrific year one sign for what is the long-term plan. I don't want to win seven games with Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't want to win seven games with a bunch of fighting Rex Burkheads, as I've said in the past. It needs to continue to be a long-term plan. But I could draw up a situation where the easiest way to win seven games next year is take Will Anderson at two, take the best defensive player at 12, and bring in Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, that's the easiest way to get to seven games. Not advocating for that, saying that's the easiest path to get there. Where I wanted to challenge you with, like, the embrace the suck, because I still hear some embrace the suck elements. I know you don't want to, like, use that as the slogan, mm-hmm. which is fine. Maybe it's too harsh, things like that. But it doesn't really change the nature of the conversation, right? If the Texans go defense, because let's just say they're committed to the philosophy of DeMeco Ryans, they're committed to having a defensive-minded guy. Maybe part of the negotiation was, hey, DeMeco, come to Houston. You can have the number two pick. And he drafts his Bosa, or he drafts Jalen Carter to fix the interior defensive line, which was a huge weakness for the Houston Texans last year. Look at how many yards they gave up on the ground. I don't think that DeMeco Ryan's going to be too fond of that. What if they go defense two? There's not a quarterback there 12. You don't draft Hendon Hooker in the middle rounds. Now you go into 2024, that next draft, where you're still looking for franchise quarterback. At that point, do you embrace the suck?
I can, but I think that when you say that about giving him those picks, look, I think to me, you can do those kind of things. And I don't see, because I'm like you, I don't want a veteran quarterback. If I'm going to take a flyer or I'm looking for a quarterback next year and I'm not going to take him in the draft, then I'm truly going to get one of those guys that just got in the wrong situation on their first go round, still young enough with enough potential that they could either show you that they could actually compete to be your franchise quarterback, or they could crap the bed so badly that they're doing you a solid and they're helping you get where you need to go in the draft. I think that if you actually did that with DeMeco, I think that it would be easier for me, without embracing the suck, to like where they're going, because I don't think that enhancing the defense in year one like that is going to translate to a whole lot more wins. And that means that you're still going to war with the same guys on offense you had a year ago. And teams are going to focus even more on stopping Pierce, because they know that the passing game seems to be limited and the receivers are not that great. And you're looking at all these different options and going, where are they going to beat us? They can stay in games with their defense a little bit more, sure. But I think that leads you down the road of doing exactly what a lot of these teams have done to get another top five draft pick. And if they go that route and do that, I can understand it. But I think, to add to what you said, the one thing I would say, Jeremy, is you could say that you gave DeMeco the number two pick as part of the negotiation. Or you could say maybe it's because they just don't have a 100% buy-in and they're not sold on any one of these three guys. The holdups or the shortcomings of each one of these three guys at quarterback coming out are too much for them to overcome and say that they can focus on one and truly believe they can be the guy. If that's the case, and like I said, if they don't have it in their gut that they need one of those three guys, then don't draft them.
713-780-ESPN. A lot of people want to weigh in on what is a successful first year for DeMeco Ryans. The HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. How many wins are in play for DeMeco in year one as well? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I said on our Twitch channel, the twitch.tv/ESPN975, I said 5-7 wins is in play next year. I really do think that 5-7 wins is in play. David Culley won 4 games 2 years ago. Lovie Smith won 3 games this past year, and they were in other games. I know every NFL game they're in games. But you think that you're getting an upgraded coach, which I think is fair to say. Not only an upgrade at the head coaching position, but I think you're getting upgrades at critical position coaches' spots too. Like, I think the OC next year is going to be better than Pep Hamilton. I think that the defensive play caller, if it's D'Amico Ryans, if it's not D'Amico Ryans, will be a better defensive play caller than Lovie Smith, who led a bottom two defense the last 2 years with the Houston Texans. And then you're getting more roster. You're getting more talent. You're getting development of all the rookies. You're getting two first-round draft picks, one at number 2, one number 12. And then you also play a last-place schedule, and the divisions that you're playing this year aren't as difficult as the divisions you just played, in my opinion. So I think 5-7 wins is certainly in play, plus the 5. Like, I think the Texans will win 5 games next year.
I think 5 is not completely within reach. I like I said, I'm not talking about the number 1 pick in the draft next year. I'm talking about getting another top 5 pick.
Right. It's a different conversation. Yeah.
And I think that's definitely realistic. I think you can win 5 games and still be right where you need to be to get one of the higher picks. And like we've talked about, you can sweeten the pot if you want to move up from there. And depending on who you're dealing with, you could end up with either May or Caleb Williams or Marvin Harrison Jr. in what seems to be, in the early stages, looking like a stud-laden top of the draft that could help you continue to get better quicker.
I think 5 might be light.
I think so, too. That's because why I think that the upside range is 7.
But doesn't a lot of it rest on quarterback?
It does, but also, like, the schedule's just... Like, Tom Brady's not on the schedule next year now. Who's going to be the quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Kyle Trask? Arizona Cardinals. If you get the Cardinals early in the season...
Yeah, Murray's out for a
Murray's
half
out.
Year.
Yeah. Like, just depending on how the schedule falls, you get the garbage Colts twice, Tennessee, Ryan Tannehill, they're a mess. Like, I mean, what if Lamar Jackson gets traded? Then you got Baltimore next year. You got Atlanta. Like... Carolina, like, the schedule's
it fits, like it helps lead.
It's
to
in
that.
Your
that,
favor,
that's why,
for sure.
Yeah, and that's why that comes into play. Like, but that's part of the equation. That's part of the algorithm when you look at the Texans. But I said no to the quarterback because I think you're improving a quarterback no matter what. Like, I really do. Like, I don't think that Davis Mills is going to be the quarterback of the Houston Texans. I'd rather it not be a veteran, mediocre quarterback. But I think you're going to improve at the quarterback position no matter what.
Well, it's like saying that you're used to making crap sandwiches, and instead of crap, you discovered Nutella or some cheap brand of peanut butter or something else. No matter where you go from the crap sandwich, it's going to taste better and have better results, and that's what you're doing when you're moving on from Davis Mills.
Exactly.
I hate to break it to everyone that was a Mills truther in the Mills Mafia at the start of the year.
That's vanished. That's gone now.
Yeah, but the reality check is what we told you all along, that this dude wasn't very good, and he proved it. So now, no matter what you do as quarterback, you should be better. I agree with that, right? But how much better? And what kind of a difference maker is another guy going to be able to make, especially when you're still trying to find and fill the roles of the key position skill players around him? So I totally agree with you. Wherever you go at quarterback should be better than what you had a year ago. But that doesn't necessarily translate to being more successful on offense or winning more football games.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to Jose in Channelview, the home of Jalen Hurts. Jose, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Jose?
How y'all doing?
What's up, man?
Great.
Hey, man, I'm Carmen Regards. I hear y'all talking about the Texans, diehard Texans, as they came back to Houston, quarterback situation. My thoughts are they're not high, or y'all don't expect them to take quarterback in the first round with the number two pick. What about trading for a quarterback that's the backup out there in the market right now? Well, that could be a potential free agent, or maybe thinking about trading for like a Brock Purdy. Did good at the end of the season with the Niners. He knows D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans knows him. Bringing him into the system. They're trying to run a Kyle Shanahan scheme, offense. I want to get your thoughts on that. Also, maybe if Lamar Jackson does sign with the Ravens against an extension, maybe a Tyler Huntley, you know, the backup over there, bringing him in over if, you know, the Texans don't take a quarterback in this year's draft. I'll hang up and listen on that.
Appreciate it, Jose. Look, some of this we've touched on previously. I think that Brock Purdy is going to probably need Tommy John surgery. He's going to be down for quite a while, and it's not one of those situations that's conducive for him to move or for the Texans to make a move in that direction. But some of the guys that we talked about, another guy that kind of fits the bill of what Jose was talking about, is Trey Lance. And if San Francisco is looking for a veteran, if you're in Trey Lance's camp, though you've been injured, you know, 2 years, you and your agent are probably saying, maybe it's time for me to play somewhere else where I'm going to get a fair shot to play, because I'm sitting here every year wondering when I'm going to get my shot. And yeah, I got hurt getting my shot a year ago, but this is the year, if I'm healthy, I should get it again. And if I don't, then maybe it is better that I go somewhere. And if there's anybody that can tell you whether he can play or not, it's the guy that sees him in practice every day on the other side of the football in D'Amico Ryans. But we've mentioned Jordan Love. We mentioned Zach Wilson. We mentioned guys like that just to say there's a guy that was in a bad situation in his first contract in his first couple of years. That doesn't mean that you don't know if he can play or not.
I'm all in for Tyler Huntley. He's a Pro Bowl quarterback. I love Pro Bowl quarterbacks. So give me. I'm kidding. To Jose's point about not, I think he said that we don't want the Texans to draft quarterback. I'm not willing to go that far. I'm more open to it than most. Like, most people think it's quarterback or bust at number two, or even trade up to number one. I'm perfectly content if you take Will Anderson or Jalen Carter, especially now that you hired D'Amico Ryans. I would not have felt that way if you hired Mike Kafka or Shane Steichen. I would have said, go get that quarterback. But now that D'Amico goes here, if he wants Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, well, you've committed to D'Amico, and if he was willing to commit to one of those two guys, then you have to ride that out. Like, you have to give the head coach what he wants a lot of the time. So I'm more open to defense than a lot of people, but I'd be happy with one of four players at number two: Bryce Young, Will Levis, Jalen Carter, Will Anderson. I have a very low bar for the Texans. You draft one of those four guys at number two, I'm going to be good.
And C.J. Stroud does not enter that at all.
No, I want one of four guys. C.J. Stroud, not one of those four guys. And I don't want to trade up. That's where I'm at. Now, Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans might come together and say, you know, Bryce Young is a tier above everybody else. We feel like we must get Bryce Young, because if we don't, then we're going to lose out for the next 10 years because we weren't the team that drafted him. If they're looking at their draft board from that point of view, okay, you know, I like bravado, I like courage, I like being brave, make that trade. But if you're wrong, both of you are getting fired.
Right, no
like
doubt.
That's where the stakes come in if you do that. I hate, and I'll crush it too. I'll crush it the day that it happens, because I don't want trade up. I want one of four players. But if they trade up, they better be right. And if they're not, well, their jobs are gone.
I'm with you on that, and I'm with you on the fact that I don't want to trade up either. Like, they made the bed, they got to lie in it. But lying in it at number two doesn't mean that you're going to give up draft capital that's so valuable to you right now to get to one spot up, especially if it means the first next year or the second pick in the second round even, I think might be too much, because you have too many holes to fill. And that's something that you basically could have controlled better than you did, and now you have the situation to deal with. I don't want to give anybody up. To his other point, though, this is not the right situation for a veteran quarterback that's looking to be successful.
But he said backup. And like, Brock Purdy's not a name that I like either. But, like, the names you mentioned, those are backups. Trey Lance didn't start because he was hurt. Jordan Love's been a career backup to this point. Zach Wilson got benched. Like, but I don't want a veteran backup. I want a boom or bust young guy, has a chance to just take off and be an absolute steal. But it's more likely than not he's going to stink. And you might win three or four games. But that's okay. Like, it needs to be one of those two things. It can't be a 7-win quarterback.
No, look, and you know what? It's my mistake, because I was thinking he said Lamar Jackson. I'm like, what you
don't? Yeah, he said Huntley.
Yeah, what you don't need is Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers, Carr, all the names we've heard in the past. Hey, what if the Texans trade? Because the rest of the roster isn't ready for what they want at this stage in their career to be successful. Now, Huntley's a guy that, of the guys we're talking about that are backups, he might be the guy that's the most proven, that might be the most interesting, that might have the best chance to win with, because I saw him fill in for Lamar Jackson against Green Bay and put the team on his shoulders and do everything with his legs and his arm and everything with the offense to basically, until the very last play, win the game. And so I know that we kid about him making the Pro Bowl, but when he filled in for Lamar Jackson, he kept him in a lot of games. He showed that he can do a lot of things. He's a dynamic quarterback. But I think that if Baltimore moves on from Lamar Jackson next year, whether you call him their bridge or they want to see what they truly have, I think he's their starting quarterback. So I think he would be a lot tougher to pry away.
I don't think as highly of Tyler Huntley as you do, but he would also qualify as a boom-bust guy, where I'd be okay with it. He's only 24 years old. I'd rather have all-pro quarterbacks, or Pro Bowl quarterbacks, I should say, than not Pro Bowl quarterbacks. I say that in jest. I don't think that highly in Huntley, but I'd rather have Tyler Huntley than Jimmy Garoppolo. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is a better quarterback than Tyler Huntley, but I'd rather have Tyler Huntley. Like, I just can't have that that veteran, you know, quarterback who's around the age of 30, who's like a 2-year bridge and is actually going to win you a couple more football games and but not get you into the postseason. That's the worst thing the Texans could do from my point of view, is bring in a veteran mediocre QB. 713-780-ESPN-5856. Besides QB, who is the best football player in the draft? I kind of go back and forth with this one on Jalen Carter and Will Anderson. I currently lean Jalen Carter.
I do too.
I think Jalen Carter's right now the better football player than Will Anderson. And part of what goes into that thought, too, is that Jalen Carter does it from the interior defensive line, which is harder to find skill there than the edge rusher that Will Anderson provides.
Yeah, no, I think it's Carter. And I think that he's so disruptive. And a guy at that size to be that athletic. And, you know, I always go back to, though I don't expect him to be and have the same resume as an Aaron Donald, I do know that it's been a while since we've seen a guy that pairs that kind of size and strength with the athleticism that he shows in order to wreak havoc in the backfield and take two defenders on, or two offensive blockers on, and just still be able to get in the backfield and be disruptive. I think he does a ton of things right, and he's a guy in the middle of your line that could really solidify your defense. Is he a Bosa? I don't know, but I know that from stopping the run and putting pressure on a quarterback up the middle, he's a guy that can do it basically single-handedly, and if he has help, you can control an offensive line. That's big for any defense, but especially a defensive-minded coach like D'Amico. So I think that he would be the first non-quarterback off the board in my draft board because of the fact that he's kind of transcending in terms of what we've seen defensive linemen to be, and maybe not since an Aaron Donald or a Khalil Mack. And Khalil Mack wasn't a defensive lineman as much as he moved around. But to have that interior defensive lineman have the athleticism that a guy like Carter has, that'd be a fun guy to play. If you're D'Amico Ryan, that'd be a fun tool to have in your tool shed.
9723, if the Texans were to trade for Lance, what do you think the cost would be for him? San Fran traded away a ton of picks to get him in the draft a few years ago. They'll also want to recoup some of that for sure. I think one thing that hurts the Trey Lance trade market is that Brock Purdy's probably not going to be ready for the start of the year. Like, if he has Tommy John, he's not ready for the start of the year, which means what is San Francisco doing at quarterback? And if they just go in-house with Trey Lance and Brock Purdy, I don't think they could trade Trey Lance. I think the Brock Purdy injury kind of shuffled around the dominoes of the quarterback carousel this offseason, as did the Tom Brady retirement. All right, Keyshawn Johnson, former NFL football player, as we know, host you can listen to every single day on ESPN 97.5, Key J and Max, every morning on this station. Keyshawn Johnson joins the Killer Bees when we return on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.